Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции! Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы! Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества! Ура!
This is Back in the USSR on CFRU 93.3 FM. I'm Siegfried, and it's on. The war is on. Donald Trump, Bibi Netanyahu, the morally and sexually depraved ruling class of the US, Israel, and the entire Western world, the Epstein class basically, has pulled the trigger on Iran. The empire struck Iran without provocation on February 28th in the midst of Ramadan and murdered its leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, along with hundreds of others in cities throughout the country. At least 148 schoolgirls in the southern Iranian city of Minab were slaughtered when U.S.-Israeli bombs struck their school. How's that for liberating the women of Iran, or whatever BS the empire's trying to sell these days? 10 Pakistanis were killed by U.S. troops while protesting the war outside the U.S. consulate in Karachi. How's that for colonialism? Speaking of colonialism, now Trump expects the Iranian people to rise up against their government on his behalf and put his puppet, the former crown prince, into power as the new Shah. You know, just deliver their country to him on a silver platter. Trump, like the other leaders of the American empire, see the Iranian people as their playthings. But modern states don't collapse when you kill their leaders. This isn't feudalism. This isn't Khal Drogo if you watched Game of Thrones. This is a corrupt global empire putting its bigoted, racist contempt for the Iranian people on full display, treating them like a flock of brainwashed sheep rather than the citizens of a 5,000-year-old nation and civilization. Resistance to U.S.-Israeli aggression began immediately on Saturday. Iran has hit the U.S. bases in Saudi Arabia, Dubai, Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, and hit them hard. Just like last June, during the 12-day war, you know, when Iran was attacked unprovoked by Israel and retaliated. Just like last June, Israel is getting pounded right now. It's getting hammered. Tel Aviv is getting hammered. Israeli bases are getting hammered. U.S. ships have also been hit. And the Strait of Hormuz has been closed. You know, the stretch of water between the Persian Gulf and the Indian Ocean through which much of the world's ocean, the world's oil passes, I should say. That's been closed. You know, by Iranian missiles, drones. The Iranians are defending their country. And the people of the global south stand with them. There are mass protests outside U.S. embassies throughout the region now, and increasingly beyond, from Lebanon to Pakistan, even India, you know, Iraq, many other places, as the people stand up against their real enemy. They see what imperialism did and what it's doing with this ongoing aggression, and they're taking a stand. They're standing with the Iranian people. For real, they're standing with the Iranian people. As Carlos Martinez rightly pointed out in an online post, quote, anyone who thinks Khamenei's assassination will work out well for the U.S. and Israel is utterly delusional and should seek urgent help. Iranians will be more determined than ever to defend their country and their revolution. The imperialists and Zionists will be more isolated than ever before. Israel is already taking a battering. U.S. bases in Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, and the UAE are already taking a battering. These family dictatorships could easily fall. And Trump, Netanyahu, and their stooges are showing off their flagrant criminality for the whole world to see. Trampling on international law, trampling on the UN Charter, trampling on the most basic norms of international relations. Lenin wrote in 1915, quote, if tomorrow Morocco were to declare war on France, India on England, Persia or China on the Tsarist Empire of Russia, and so forth, those would be just defensive wars, irrespective of who attacked first, and every socialist would sympathize with the victory of the oppressed, dependent, unequal states against the oppressing, slave-owning, predatory great powers. End quote. And Carlos Martinez goes on, in this instance, of course, Iran did not attack first. But that only strengthens the point that today, every socialist, every anti-colonialist, every opponent of genocide, every supporter of the most basic principles of sovereignty and equality must stand firmly with Iran, waging a defensive war against the oppressing, slave-owning, predatory United States and Israel. And this is only the beginning. As this war unfolds, let's remember this is a colonial war being waged against Iran, just like the colonial wars waged against Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, and Palestine. Still going on in Palestine. That hasn't ended. It is a war meant to subjugate the peoples of the global south to imperial control from Washington. And it comes on the heels of U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio's infamous speech in Munich just this month, where he praised past European empires and effectively called for the reestablishment of a 19th century colonial order for the world. And Mark Carney isn't doing anything to oppose him. I mean, he even praised the attacks on Iran. But Epstein's drinking buddies, you know, these corrupt ruling class losers, cannot break the resistance. They couldn't break Gaza, and they won't break Iran. So, once again, I'm going to turn things over to Ben Norton, who did an amazing breakdown of all of this. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
The United States and Israel are waging a war of aggression against Iran.
The United States military began major combat operations in Iran.
On the 28th of February, the U.S. and Israel launched a surprise attack on Iran. This came at a time when the U.S. claimed that supposedly it was participating in peace talks with Iran, but Washington violated those peace talks and launched what it called preemptive strikes, which is blatantly illegal according to international law. This is an imperialist war of aggression, and it must be emphasized that this has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. Donald Trump gave a speech in which he admitted that the goal of the U.S. is to overthrow the Iranian government and put in power a puppet regime like the CIA did when it carried out a coup d'etat in 1953 against Iran's democratically elected leader. Today, the U.S. empire is once again trying to overthrow an independent government. In his speech, Trump threatened members of the Iranian military and said they must put down their weapons, and if they don't, the U.S. empire will eliminate them.
To the members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, the armed forces, and all of the police, I say tonight that you must lay down your weapons and have complete immunity, or in the alternative, face certain death.
And then Trump openly called for the people of Iran to overthrow their government. Again, this is not about non-existent nuclear weapons. This is about regime change and imperialism.
Finally, to the great, proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will be probably your only chance for generations. For many years, you have asked for America's help, but you never got it. No president was willing to do what I am willing to do tonight. Now you have a president who is giving you what you want. So let's see how you respond. America is backing you with overwhelming strength and devastating force.
But Washington also underestimates the ability of Iran to respond and defend itself. And immediately after the U.S. launched this war of aggression, Iran started attacking U.S. military bases in the region. The U.S. has surrounded Iran with more than 40,000 troops in dozens of military bases and installations. And these are all targets that Iran can and will hit. So immediately in response to this U.S.-Israeli war of aggression, Iran bombed the Al Udeid airbase that the U.S. has in Qatar. This is the largest U.S. military base in the region. And Iran also hit U.S. military bases in Bahrain, Kuwait, and the UAE. And this is just in a few hours after the initial U.S.-Israeli attack. So the arrogance of politicians in Washington can actually end up being their Achilles heel, because Donald Trump came to the wrong lesson after invading Venezuela on the 3rd of January and kidnapping Venezuela's internationally recognized constitutional president, Nicolas Maduro. But Venezuela is much smaller and much weaker than Iran. Venezuela has a population of less than 30 million people, whereas Iran has more than 93 million people. Iran is significantly larger than Iraq, which the U.S. invaded in another war of aggression in 2003. And let's not forget that the U.S. lost the war in Iraq. This is why Trump warned in the speech that he gave after he started this war that U.S. troops may lose their lives fighting this imperialist war of aggression.
The lives of courageous American heroes may be lost, and we may have casualties. That often happens in war. But we're doing this not for now. We're doing this for the future, and it is a noble mission. We pray for every service member as they selflessly risk their lives. We ask God to protect all of our heroes in harm's way, and we trust that, with his help, the men and women of the armed forces will prevail. We have the greatest in the world, and they will prevail.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu published a message on Twitter calling to overthrow the Iranian government. I should remind people that Netanyahu is currently wanted, as we speak, by the International Criminal Court for the crimes against humanity he committed against the Palestinian people in Gaza with the full support of the U.S. empire. And now Netanyahu and Trump are waging another imperial war of aggression. And Netanyahu admitted that this is about regime change. He said, quote, "Our joint operation will create the conditions for the brave Iranian people to take their fate into their own hands, to cast off the yoke of tyranny and bring freedom and peace-loving values to Iran," end quote. So this is the same old colonial rhetoric we heard from the European empires, who said they had to civilize the barbaric native populations, indigenous peoples of the lands they colonized, in order to exploit their natural resources, to rob them of their natural wealth. And the Western colonialists claimed that they were spreading civilization. It was part of the white man's burden. This is the same rhetoric we hear today from the colonialists in Tel Aviv and Washington. And it must be emphasized, this is not just about Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. A lot of people are focusing on the internal politics in the U.S. and Israel. You know, the U.S. has a midterm election coming up in 2026. Netanyahu has faced charges of corruption that are very well documented. And certainly Trump and Netanyahu want to increase support domestically, and they want to be remembered in history as the leaders who overthrew the revolutionary Iranian government. But this goes back much longer. This is not just about the individual leaders today in the U.S. and Israel. The U.S. empire has been trying to overthrow the Iranian government for decades. Immediately after 9/11, after the attacks on September 11th, 2001, the former top U.S. military general Wesley Clark, who was a commander of NATO, he revealed that the Pentagon made plans to overthrow seven governments in West Asia and North Africa. Those governments were Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. And the U.S. succeeded in overthrowing the governments in six of those seven countries. The only remaining country is Iran. Listen here to this very revealing admission by a former top U.S. military general. And keep in mind, he said this two decades ago, before anyone ever thought in a million years that Donald Trump would become president.
Right after 9/11, about 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." He said, "I just got this down from upstairs," meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, today. And he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
So again, it must be emphasized that this U.S.-Israeli war of aggression against Iran has nothing to do with nuclear weapons. Iran does not have nuclear weapons and has not tried to get nuclear weapons. If Iran had nuclear weapons, the U.S. and Israel would not be attacking it right now. This is why the U.S. has never attacked North Korea, because North Korea does actually have nuclear weapons. What's actually happening here is that the Trump administration is just regurgitating the same lies that the George W. Bush administration used to try to justify its illegal imperialist war of aggression against Iraq in 2003, when the CIA falsely claimed that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, WMDs, and the U.S. corporate media obediently regurgitated these lies on behalf of the CIA. If Iraq actually had nuclear weapons, the U.S. would not have invaded. The same situation is true in Iran today. And let's not forget the recent history, which is rarely mentioned in the Western media. Back in 2015, Iran signed a nuclear deal with the U.S. and the four other permanent members of the UN Security Council, plus Germany and the European Union. They all came together to sign the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. That was known as the Iran Nuclear Deal, and Iran agreed that it would never develop nuclear weapons in return for the U.S. and other Western countries lifting the illegal sanctions that they had imposed on Iran to try to crush the Iranian government. And the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, said very clearly that Iran was abiding by the nuclear deal. It was not developing nuclear weapons. But what happened in 2018? During his first administration as U.S. president, Trump illegally tore up the nuclear deal, violating a U.N. Security Council resolution that the U.S. had previously voted for under Obama. And then Trump imposed illegal sanctions on Iran. So Trump destroyed the Iran nuclear deal. And then when Trump came into office as U.S. president for his second term in 2025, he claimed he wanted to negotiate another nuclear deal with Iran. And then what happened? In June 2025, the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran again in what became known as the 12-day war. And the Wall Street Journal admitted that the U.S. did not actually want real peace talks, real negotiations. Instead, Washington and Tel Aviv were using these fake peace talks as a ruse, as a cover, as an illusion, while they were planning the surprise attack against Iran. And this is exactly what the U.S. and Israel have done yet again this February 2026, launching another war of aggression against Iran on a much bigger scale. They want regime change. They think the Iranian government is weak and they can overthrow it and put a puppet regime in power. It is the U.S. and Israel that do not want peace. They do not support diplomacy. They never actually wanted these peace talks and these fake negotiations. By the way, Iran's current president is a reformist. The Western media praised him when he was elected, saying that Masoud Pezeshkian is a reformist who wants to improve relations with the West. He wants to agree to another Iran nuclear deal, despite the fact that many critics in Tehran said that you cannot ever trust the West. You cannot trust the United States and Israel because they violate every agreement they sign. And that's exactly what happened yet again. Ask Native Americans what it's like signing agreements with the U.S. government. They know that the U.S. government can never be trusted, because what the U.S. government wants is not peace, it's hegemony, it's complete dominance over this very important geostrategic region, the Middle East, or a better term is West Asia. It goes without saying that many of the world's largest producers of oil and natural gas are in this region. The U.S. wants to control all of those resources, and in particular, the U.S. empire is waging a new Cold War against China, and the U.S. wants to cut off China from its most important sources of energy, which is also why the U.S. invaded Venezuela and kidnapped Venezuela's president. It's not a coincidence that more than 80% of Venezuela's oil exports were going to China. And by the way, China also buys about 80% of Iran's oil exports. And China is the largest importer of oil on Earth and the number one purchaser of oil from the Persian Gulf region. China buys a lot of oil from Saudi Arabia, Iraq, the UAE, Kuwait, Iran, Oman, Qatar, Bahrain. The U.S. wants to control all of this so U.S. corporations can profit and exploit them. And the U.S. wants to cut off China from this energy as the U.S. prepares for a future war with China to do the same thing to China that it's trying to do to Iran, to have total global domination and global hegemony to restore the unipolar global order. That is the goal of the U.S. empire. By the way, this is currently what Donald Trump is doing to Cuba. The U.S. empire is trying to crush Cuba with an oil blockade, starving the country of fuel to try to collapse the economy to overthrow the government. And Trump said, he admitted, they want a takeover of Cuba. So we see how the U.S. empire is using access to oil and other natural resources as a geopolitical weapon to overthrow governments it doesn't like, to impose global hegemony. And when we look at the Middle East, West Asia, this extremely important region, Israel plays the key role as an extension of the U.S. empire, as an outpost, a beachhead of the U.S. empire. Netanyahu himself boasted that Israel is a mighty aircraft carrier of the U.S., an unsinkable aircraft carrier. And by the way, Netanyahu is an American. He had U.S. citizenship twice. He only gave up his citizenship in order to become the prime minister of Israel. He was educated and spent the most formative years of his life in the U.S. He worked in Boston with Mitt Romney and other Republicans. He's been a friend of Trump for decades. He is an American settler colonialist in West Asia who is trying to colonize the region on behalf of the U.S. empire. And Iran is the biggest obstacle to U.S. imperial control of one of the most important regions on Earth. Never forget that back in 1951, Iran had a democratically elected prime minister, Mohammad Mossadegh, who was not a communist. He was not even a socialist. He was a left-wing nationalist who nationalized the oil of Iran. He said, "Our oil belongs to us, not to British and American corporations." So what happened? In 1953, the US and the UK carried out a coup d'etat. The CIA and Britain's intelligence service, MI6, organized a coup d'etat that overthrew the democratically elected Prime Minister Mossadegh, and the US put in power the Shah, a king, a monarch, a dictator. The US does not care one iota about democracy. None of this has to do with democracy. This is imperialism. The U.S. wants to put in power a puppet who will govern Iran on behalf of the U.S. empire and allow U.S. corporations to exploit Iran's natural resources and to exploit the labor of the Iranian people. If you listen to the rhetoric of imperial planners in Washington, they used to talk about how Iran was part of their so-called twin pillars strategy. The U.S. empire tried to control the Middle East, West Asia, with two pillars. The Western pillar was Saudi Arabia, and the Eastern pillar was Iran. However, in 1979, the people of Iran rose up in a revolution, and they overthrew the Shah, the U.S.-backed dictator, and they had an anti-colonial revolution and created a new government. And the U.S. empire lost one pillar of its so-called twin pillar strategy, and ever since then, the U.S. empire has been desperately trying to overthrow Iran's revolutionary government. This is why the U.S. government ironically supported Saddam Hussein's Iraq in the 1980s, after Iraq invaded Iran in a war of aggression and tried to overthrow Iran's new revolutionary government. And the CIA supported Saddam Hussein as he used chemical weapons and gassed people in Iran. Because again, the U.S. does not care one bit about democracy or human rights or any of that propagandistic nonsense. This is about imperialism. And the strategy of the U.S. empire today is very clear. Washington wants to install another puppet in Tehran. And who's the puppet the U.S. is supporting? None other than the so-called crown prince, the fail son of the former U.S.-backed dictator, the Shah. And the former Israeli intelligence officer, Barak Ravid, who rebranded as a journalist after working for Israeli intelligence agencies, He admitted, he reported that the Trump administration has been secretly meeting with the so-called Iranian exiled crown prince, in scare quotes, and expressing support for him to try to put him in power as a puppet. Let's keep in mind, this guy has never had a real job. His entire life, which, by the way, he spent most of his life living in the United States, working closely with the U.S. government to try to overthrow Iran's government. And now that the U.S. and Israel are waging another war of aggression against Iran, this fake so-called crown prince, Reza Pahlavi, went on Twitter and he called on the people of Iran to overthrow the Iranian government with the support of the U.S. so they can put this puppet in power. He said, quote, "The aid that the president of the United States promised to the brave people of Iran has now arrived. This is a humanitarian intervention," end quote. He said, quote, "The Islamic Republic is collapsing," end quote. And he sent a message to the military, police, and security forces. He said, quote, "Join the people and help bring about a stable and secure transition. Otherwise, you will go down with Khamenei's sinking ship and his regime," end quote. That's a threat. This puppet of the U.S. is saying that they will eliminate any members of the military, police, and security forces who refuse to be puppets and commit treason and work with the U.S. and Israel to overthrow their government. And if you want an idea of what the U.S. would like to do to Iran, look at what the U.S. empire did to Syria. For years, the U.S. government spent billions of dollars arming and training extremists to overthrow the Syrian government. And in late 2024, they succeeded. And who took over Syria? None other than the former leader of Al-Qaeda, after the U.S. media whitewashed this extremist who, again, was literally the leader of Al-Qaeda. And now he's being invited to the White House to meet with Donald Trump. This former leader of Al-Qaeda, who declared himself the dictator of Syria, he never was elected. He has no democratic mandate. This is exactly what the U.S. wants to repeat in Iran. The U.S. empire wants an obedient puppet who will sell his country's natural resources to U.S. corporations for pennies on the dollar, help the U.S. buy up the country, and allow the U.S. and Israel to control the entire region to eliminate all opposition. That's what this is actually about. It's about hegemony, dominance, exploitation, imperialism. It has nothing to do with nuclear weapons or democracy or human rights or any of that propagandistic nonsense. So keep that in mind when you listen to Western corporate media outlets simply regurgitate the lies coming from the White House. And if you want to be informed about what's actually happening, make sure you subscribe to our work here at Geopolitical Economy Report. We will be analyzing the latest developments and we will cut through the Western media's propagandistic narrative. On that note, I'm going to conclude. I am Ben Norton. I'm the editor-in-chief of Geopolitical Economy Report. I want to thank everyone for joining me today. I will see you all next time.
Time's up, peace for all, and then prepare for war.
You're listening to Back in the USSR. That was Midnight Oil with Blossom and Blood. And like Ben Norton said, the propaganda campaign leading up to this war has been fierce. Whether it's protesters or women or whatever, the Empire has been taking, you know, has basically been repackaging whole segments of the Iranian public into useful symbols to justify bombing and killing them. Turning them to symbols, useful symbols. And I'm sorry to say that I encountered this directly at the Guelph Poetry Slam February edition a few weeks ago. And it's a classic case of good intentions going bad and unwittingly manufacturing consent for war. The organizers brought in this middle-aged, Toronto-based Iranian-Canadian writer who hasn't lived in Iran for decades, and describes herself as an exile in her poetry, which has won awards, by the way. Anyway, it was bad. Zero mention of sanctions, zero calls for lifting the U.S.-imposed economic siege of Iran that has been imposing immense hardships on the population for years. She expressed open hatred, in fact, for the Iranian people for not overthrowing their government in the protests last month. She went on a 20 solid minutes. She went on for 20 solid minutes in this lurid, lurid piece about how barbaric and murderous the Iranian government is. No sources, no facts. In fact, she mocked the very concept of evidence and proof. Raw emotion is enough, apparently. I know many Palestinian poets. I've heard them perform. I've even performed some of their work myself. And the difference between them and this Iranian-Canadian woman was just night and day. She basically demonized Iran, and I would not be surprised if some of the people who heard her speak that day reacted to the U.S.-Israeli aggression against Iran by shrugging their shoulders. After all, if it's such a bad place, they must have had it coming. That's manufacturing consent, people. I don't know if this poet was deliberately doing it or if it was just stupidly naive and allowed herself to become a vehicle for propaganda, but it fundamentally doesn't matter. The damage was done. To hell with emotion and poetic license. If you want to attack the Iranian government in a faraway, you know, from a faraway Canadian city, you know, the privilege of living in a faraway Canadian city, when the drums of war are beating against Iran and the propaganda on the airwaves is getting dialed up to 11, you better have evidence. And if you're not automatically skeptical with regard to lurid claims about Iran these days, then, I mean, you've got a bigger problem. This woman had no right to speak for the people of Iran, I mean, because she will not bear the consequences of anything that is done to them or anything that happens to them. Anyways, I had to talk to Truth Is and the other organizers at Guelph Spoken Word about this. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
It's the paradigm of the wagon train versus the swarthy hordes, first enunciated very well by in a marvelous article by Tom Engelhardt in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. It could be happening in the American Wild West. It could be in the Amazon jungle, the North African desert, the Sudan, the Transvaal, the South Pacific jungles, or Indochina. The scene is generally the same. There's a fort, or an encampment, or a wagon train. And inside that encampment are the human beings. They're white. They're human. They're warm, they're attractive, they talk, and they're nice. Outside come the swarthy hordes, the savages. They can be Indians, they can be Bushmen, they can be Arabs on camels and horses or whatever else. And they are the subhumans, and they are attacking human beings. And the wagons form their circle, and the human beings know what to do. They level their guns and they begin to knock off, shoot, and kill these screaming savages who attack them. Why do the swarthy hordes attack the white people? You don't know. They never tell you. Is it to protect their lands? Is it to protect their herds? Is it to protect their villages and their towns and their families and their children? No, it's just because they like to do that. That's their thing. They like to attack. And so they have to be killed. And by the way, it's not even bravery that they manifest. As they charge in great numbers and get cut down in horrible numbers, this is not even bravery, although similar acts by whites would be portrayed as heroic. This itself is portrayed as a manifestation of the swarthy hordes, their fanatic, crazed way of wanting to bloodlust. Now the trouble with this paradigm is that it turns the history of the last 400 years on its head. That it reverses the roles of usurper and usurped. It reverses the roles of victim and victimizer. It reverses the roles of those who were massacred and those who were doing the massacring. It was the European and North American civilizers, so-called, who went in there and destroyed the villages and destroyed their industries and destroyed their townships. Read Engels on North Africa, what happened to the Arabs and Berbers, and when he goes in and describes the beautiful towns with the fine, hard stone and plaster buildings and their woolen industries and their mining industries and their arts and crafts and all that. And then read the description of the French troops coming in and systematically destroying it and killing every man, woman, and child. Read about how the Germans went into South Africa and killed the Herero tribe. 80,000 people, they killed 60,000 of them, and the other 20,000 they used as slave labor in their minds. Read Mark Twain's angry, raging comments about King Leopold of Belgium, calling him a mad dog and what he did to the innocent, unoffending people of the Congo, taking them and enslaving them, 1 million of them a year dying in the mines in the Congo. That's what the history's about. That's what John Wayne is about. And what these films do is they reverse that history, stand it on its head. They do what Joseph Goebbels said. They give you a big lie, and they embellish it, and they make you root for the guys in the wagon train.
You're listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was Michael Parenti, the late, great Michael Parenti, from his talk, Rambo and the Swarthy Hordes, talking about the racist propaganda, the imperialist propaganda that suffuses the Western media, including the entertainment media. I might have to play that in its entirety at some point soon, because it certainly is appropriate. But in regard to the drumming up the propaganda, drumming up war for against Iran, it was all there. Basically, all that demonization, all that othering, it was all there. So it's always appropriate to play some Michael Parenti. Anyways, I'm going to be signing off, brothers and sisters. I will see you all next time. And until then, solidarity with the people of Iran as they defend themselves against this imperialist onslaught, which must be stopped. Colonialism must be stopped. It must be defeated. Please stay tuned.
Heridas.